WNYC Studios is brought to you by ZBiotics. Seize the day after a night of drinks with ZBiotics pre-alcohol probiotic drink. ZBiotics was invented by PhD scientists to break down the byproduct of alcohol, which is most responsible for making you feel crummy the next day. Drink ZBiotics before your first drink, drink responsibly, and you'll wake up refreshed and ready to take on the day. Try it for yourself at ZBiotics.com/WNYC and get 15% off your first order when you use WNYC at checkout. That's ZBiotics.com/WNYC and use the code WNYC at checkout for 15% off.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning, everyone. And we will begin today, as usual on Fridays, with our weekly Ask the Mayor segment. My questions and yours for Mayor Bill de Blasio at 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Or you can tweet a question for the mayor. Just use the hashtag AskTheMayor. Is he there? No. We're connecting to the mayor. I don't want to accuse him of being late. I know a lot of people do that. He has never been late for Ask the Mayor. He's always here for our 9:59 Friday appointment. And I think he's here now. Mr. Mayor, are you there?
Yes, Brian.
Good morning. Welcome back to WNYC. I have a lot I want to get to. I'm sure the 8.5 million other New Yorkers have a lot of things too. And I want to give you a chance first today to respond to something President Trump said at a campaign rally in New Hampshire last night. He declined to call for gun background checks to deal with gun violence, as he keeps flip-flopping on that. Instead, he focused on locking people up based on mental illness. And this would have ramifications for New York, which is why I'm raising it here. Listen.
And I think we have to start building institutions again because, you know, if you look at the 60s and 70s, so many of these institutions were closed and the people were just allowed to go onto the streets.
And then he said,
a lot of our conversation has to do with the fact that we have to open up institutions. We can't let these people be on the streets.
We have to open up institutions. We can't let these people be on the streets. Want to react to that?
Yeah, there's a lot there, Brian, and let me speak to that, and then I'd like to take a quick second to talk about this morning, just to reassure New Yorkers about the NYPD activity this morning around these pressure cookers that were found in the subways and the streets. But let me come back to this.
Sure. Do you want to do the pressure cookers first?
Yeah, sure. Let me just get that. Just want to reassure all your listeners, everyone in New York City, that we had three reported items, pressure cookers, two in the subway, one on the street. Everyone should know they have all been examined by the NYPD bomb squad and cleared. There is information about a potential suspect the NYPD is working on right now. But I want everyone to know that there's nothing of danger has been found, and there's no indication of any further activity. But obviously, if anybody does see anything, immediately report it to 911. We want to take these situations carefully, you know, very, very seriously, and act carefully on them. And this is the classic, if you see something, say something. But based on everything we know now, we have an all clear.
I think I'm seeing that some subway line service are still suspended.
I don't have information on that at this moment, Brian. Obviously, if there's been ongoing activity, it should be finished soon because everything has been cleared.
So you said a suspect has been identified?
No. I said there's information about a suspect. And the NYPD is working on it right now. So they have information that hopefully will turn into a specific name and then an arrest, which is typically the pattern we go through.
And you say these were not a danger. So I'm unclear. Were these pressure cookers placed in the subway system to be, in effect, bombs, or were they not?
Well, what we know is that they did not pose a danger. I don't have all the details yet on if anything at all was in them, but they did not pose a danger. What the motivation was, that's not yet determined. So I always caution people when we're, you know, a few hours into a situation, we should not draw too many conclusions. Let the NYPD do its investigation, and we'll know more as the day progresses. But what we do know now is there's no danger to the people of the city.
I am seeing that there are still suspensions on part of the 2 and 3 line. So we will, listeners, we will get you the details on that about subway service in connection with this and get it to you in just a minute. Okay, Mr. Mayor, on President Trump and building more mental institutions and locking people up.
Yeah, it's deeply troubling. I mean, there's so many pieces to that, Brian, but I'll start at the beginning. He fundamentally misunderstands mental health in America. I've learned a whole lot, and I've been very open. Shirlane's been very open about the challenges we faced in our own family, and we're pretty much like every American family. It's 1 in 5 New Yorkers, 1 in 5 American adults has a mental health challenge of one kind or another. So the reality is the way to address mental health challenges is with an actual national strategy to really put mental health on a parity basis with physical health. To support the employment of mental health professionals on a vast scale, which we don't have in this country. You know, there's a huge disparity problem. There's very few mental health services anywhere, but basically where they are aligns to where people have a lot of money, and where folks don't have a lot of money, there's very, very little. And that's why we've tried with the Thrive Initiative to make mental health services available much more broadly in the city and at least give people a point of contact to begin getting the help they need. But look, the answer, of course, is not build a bunch of institutions and lock people up. That's absolutely counterproductive. There are a small number of people who need some kind of, you know, ongoing place they can be where they get intensive professional help. There are some people who should not be out on the streets because of their situation. But there's a whole lot of other people who need mental health services and have got them on a consistent basis would be able to live much more productive lives. The problem, you know, there's only one thing the president said that was right, which is in the 60s and 70s, there were a bunch of institutions, people released with no planning, no support, and that did lead to a lot of things like the homelessness crisis we used to know. I mean, meaning the original homelessness crisis. But, Brian, the truth is, if you actually had a comprehensive mental health system, you would see a host of things change in this society. You would see a lot less homelessness, a lot less incarceration, a lot less violence. And the fact is that I believe fundamentally that requires universal health care. I don't think we should kid ourselves on this fact. The private health insurance system has been atrocious when it comes to mental health. And I think this is one of the object lessons of why we need a universal health care system in this country. Good. So I would go the exact opposite direction of the president. It's not building more mental institutions and locking people up. It's actually creating a comprehensive health care system that can reach people who are something like 50 or 60 million Americans who need mental health support.
That subway service advisory, by the way, we can now give you specifically, is simply that the 2 and 3 trains will continue to bypass the Fulton Street stop for a while. So that's the only disruption, Fulton Street being skipped on the number 2 and 3 lines because of the earlier discovery of pressure cookers, which have now been deemed to not pose a danger to the public. Kind of related to what the president said last night that we were just talking about, though not in many ways, not as a gun violence risk in New York that I know of. WNYC and Gothamist are reporting that this weekend, New York State will deploy police officers and other employees to reduce the number of homeless people in the subway system, a function normally undertaken by the city. MTA police and staff members from the State Office of Temporary and Disability Assistance will be waiting at the end of several train lines to offer services and shelter placements to the homeless, and the MTA police officers will be on hand to enforce violations of agency rules like lying down across multiple seats. The article reminds us that Governor Cuomo last week said the homeless problem in the city is worse than ever, and that according to the latest federally mandated count from earlier this year, more than 2,100 people were sleeping in the subway system, an increase of 23% compared to just a year earlier, and with 659 subway delays last year attributed to dealing with homeless people on the trains. This seems like the governor saying you or the city is not getting this job done, so he is swooping in. Do you support the state doing this weekend?
Well, Brian, you've raised several different points. I'm going to try and quickly break them apart. There's a lot of misinformation when it comes to homelessness. This city, we have a serious problem, and we are throwing a lot at it, and we're going to keep doing more. And I'm not going to rest until we make a lot more progress. But let's be very, very clear about the overall reality. Unlike so many places in this country that have proportionally much, much worse and horrible, painful street homeless situations, this city shelters people. And we do it in a compassionate way, but also an effective way in the sense that, God forbid, anyone is homeless. And that is overwhelmingly today, by the way, people who do not have a mental health challenge or substance misuse challenge. It's overwhelmingly folks who just could not make ends meet anymore. It's families. We provide shelter. And over the last 6 years, we've gotten 100,000 people from shelter to affordable housing. So that part, we got a long way to go, but there's something important there. The other thing is outreach. The Homestat initiative has consistently managed to get people off the streets. This is something that was never done before in the history of the city. Huge intensive outreach effort. Several thousand people have been reached and gotten off the streets now over the last few years. And that is going to have more effective time. In fact, the latest Hope Count number, which is the federal measure of street homelessness, show that, in fact, homelessness is not growing on the street. There is a real problem in the subways, and we're putting more and more of our NYPD emphasis and our outreach emphasis into the subways. And I think over time we're going to have the same success we had on the streets, getting more and more people to come in and accept services and stay off the streets. It will take time.
If the headcount,
go ahead.
Well, I was just going to ask, if the headcount is accurate, why are there 23% more people sleeping in the subways than just 1 year earlier on your watch, if you're doing all those things and they're effective?
Well, all those things are just factually true. So again, I Brian, it won't shock you to know that when we talk about the things that specifically really big intensive initiatives that actually are working, they don't get a whole lot of attention and the problems get much more. I don't blame people for that, but the public deserves to hear the whole picture. So the number of folks in shelter is down. The Hope Count showed, in fact, some progress getting people off the street and into permanent shelter. There's a lot more to do. The subway problem, there's a serious problem there, and that's why we're moving both NYPD, have already moved NYPD resources and outreach resources to the subways. There's a new initiative, which I think you may have seen, offering homeless folks that if they're on the verge of getting a summons, that instead of getting a summons, they can come in, get off the street, accept services, no longer be in the subway, no longer be homeless. That's something that's never been done in the history of the city, and we think is going to have a huge effect. So I believe all those pieces are going to help consistently and help us make progress. We are no longer have encampments. This is another really important point, Brian. There used to be literal, like Hoovervilles, like encampments where people would stay permanently with structures. I banned those. I got rid of those. Previous administrations let that happen, honestly. We stopped that in this administration. Also didn't get a lot of coverage, should have. But in terms of the state runs the MTA, the state has the MTA police, the state has a social services office. If they want to do more to help, that's great. They need to coordinate with the NYPD, as always. But the NYPD has an intensive presence in the subway, so everybody has to be on the same page. And as we always say, since the NYPD does a remarkable job keeping New York City safe, anytime the state isn't doing anything with law enforcement in the city, they need to coordinate. But additional resources to help us address the problem in the subway, that's fine.
Anita in Harlem, you're on WNYC with the mayor. Hello, Anita.
Hello, Mr. Mayor. We met actually with the ACF, as part of the ACFC coalition, almost 2 years ago. I'm calling. The triggering event was foreclosure. Was a notice of foreclosure was filed on my HDFC, and I 2 years later, the city is still foreclosing. Over 100 buildings have been foreclosed so far. 62 just last year. The problem is they're mostly in Brooklyn and the Bronx. And City Council 2 weeks ago found that third-party transfer, the market value of these buildings was over $200 million, but the back taxes, water, and sewer money owed was less than $5 million.
And your question is?
Well, 2 years ago when we met, the mayor said that, of course, you know, we should try to find alternatives to foreclosure if it's possible. And we asked for a task force that included stakeholders. I wonder if this is possible to have the city support affordable ownership as well as rentals.
Mr. Mayor.
Well, yeah, Anita, thank you very, very much for the question. So, Brian, I got to give you a quick moment of context because I think your listeners probably don't know the history of these buildings. A lot of these buildings were in great distress. This is sort of, you know, you remember the bad old days when we had a huge number of buildings that landlords ignored or abandoned. Classically, the South Bronx is one of the examples that this was a horrible phenomenon, but many other places. And the city stepped in. And what the city did was work with the tenants of the building, provide a lot of public resources to keep the buildings going, to try and put them in better shape. Now, this has been going on for decades, and the goal was to have the tenants of the building ultimately have ownership, but it required some kind of viable financial reality that there was an ability to keep the building up. And what has happened in some cases is that was possible, and the tenants were able to do that, and it became an affordable option for tenants, and they were able to own. In other cases, for whatever variety of reasons, the buildings were not in the shape they needed to be in. The financial reality was not viable. The city kept putting in money. And what we've said is these buildings are going to remain affordable under any situation. That's why I understand why people have used the word, quote-unquote, foreclosure. I think it's absolutely the wrong word. These are buildings with a massive amount of public resources that are affordable housing buildings. There's no foreclosure like a bank or the private sector involved. This is the public sector trying to protect the affordability of these buildings and trying to keep them decent, livable buildings. So the goal here is always to work with the tenants to come up with something where we can keep them there and have the ownership dynamic. But if there's not a viable context for ownership, what we say is, okay, then stay in the building, continue to live there at an affordable rent. The city will have to figure out some other kind of alternative to keep it affordable long term.
Okay.
But we will guarantee that it's affordable housing under any context, that the people there get to stay there. So we will follow up with Anita. Anita, please give your information to WNYC. We'll follow up on your specific case and see what we can do. And yes, to Anita's point, we clearly need to reconvene with the stakeholders because there were several times where we thought we had a larger fix to this, and it's been elusive. We need to reconvene and see what we can do to try and solve this on a bigger scale.
And thank you for the context. Another mental health question. We had a caller on our show yesterday in a segment we did about suicides in American jails. And she says her daughter is at Rikers and that even though the psychologist on the island deemed her daughter unfit for solitary confinement, the staff is trying to override the psychologist's recommendation and put her there anyway. Here's a 14-second clip of the mom.
The psychologist there said, no, she can't go back to the Bing because it would be bad for her. And they're trying to override the psychologist now and send my daughter back to the Bing. She's not getting any psychological help for her issues.
The Bing, that word that was in that clip, is what they call solitary confinement at Rikers. So that's what she's referring to. And her daughter has PTSD, she says. The criminal justice expert we had on the show said it's not uncommon for the psych staff and enforcement staff at American jails to not see eye to eye on issues like solitary confinement, viability for an individual. My question to you is, what's the point of having an on-site psychologist if jails aren't going to take their psych recommendations?
Well, look, first of all, it would be very helpful if you're able to connect us to her so we can get the details about her daughter's case and have that looked into immediately.
We can do that.
That's a point one. Point two, as I want to make sure you know and your listeners know, we ended solitary confinement for everyone up to 21 years old, period. Solitary confinement is used a lot less now. Now, on the question of the health standards that should align to it, it's a very valid question, and it's something we need to look at and make sure is clear. It doesn't shock me if one professional disagrees with another professional. That's something that is a reality. But I think that we have to be very careful. That said, when a mental health professional is raising a concern, it needs to be fully weighed. And we have to make sure that our system in all of our jails, not just Rikers, all of them, values the input of the mental health professionals. Again, a decision, it may not be as simple as one person gets to decide over another, but to value that input and make sure the health ramifications are being considered. So I take that to heart. I'm going to ask my team to go back and evaluate if that system's working well enough or if we need to do anything to revise it. But to the earlier discussion of mental health, I take very seriously if someone is sounding the alarm on a mental health challenge, that needs to be given its full weight.
And related to that, we've now had 9 police officer suicides in a short time frame. But we understand that Republican City Councilman Joe Borelli says First Lady McRae's Thrive NYC mental health initiative pulled out of a mental health first aid training for NYPD personnel because the group Blue Lives Matter was a sponsor, and Thrive only got back in after yet another police officer suicide. Channel 2 reported on a Thrive NYC deputy director internal memo saying she thinks they mishandled this. What did they mishandle?
Well, I want to start from the beginning. There's honestly some real lies being told about this whole situation, and I said that yesterday. We are going to work with any organization that's trying to provide mental health support for our officers. And the notion here that, and again, this is this councilman just trying to get, I think, some cheap publicity about something that should be way more serious and way more sacred. You don't play around with the issue of police suicide.
But I was trying in my question to stick to what's been documented. So there is this deputy director internal email saying she thinks they mishandled this.
Again, let's start at the beginning. I would have fixed this in a heartbeat. Shirlane would have fixed this in a heartbeat. Anyone would have fixed it. If all the councilmen need to say, or anyone need to say, is this organization wants to do a mental health first aid training. There was confusion about whether it was a public event or a by invitation only. Those are valid concerns. It could have been fixed. It was not something people needed to run to the media for cheap shots, especially with such a serious situation. Clearly, we've said very clearly, we would have that training tomorrow if they want to have it. So I don't know the details of what some mid-level person said or didn't say. I haven't seen all that. I don't honestly think that's the issue here. The issue is, if someone wants to do a training, we're going to work with them to do a training, particularly for our first responders, which we've been doing consistently. And it was not canceled. That's the other thing that's just an absolute fiction here. A concern was raised about whether it was a public or a private event. Whether it was a private event, it should be publicized. These are natural things. It was being discussed to figure out how to do it. So this is the kind of thing that holds us back in this city, Brian. This is ridiculous. We're talking about a massive mental health initiative trying to get help to people who need it. And what the folks want to talk about is some dispute over sponsorship and how a meeting is called. This is absolutely ridiculous. The fact is, we want as many people as possible to get this mental health first aid, and that especially means people who can help our first responders.
Johnny May in Brownsville. You're on WNYC with the mayor. Hello, Johnny May.
Hello. How are you? Good morning, Mr. Mayor. How are you?
Good morning, Johnny May.
So I am a longtime resident of Brownsville, over 50 years, and with all the outpour of the Cure Violence and putting monies into the community. We have this great program that we've been inviting you to, and you haven't come by to see us, which is Brownsville Community Culinary Center. It's on the corner of Belmont and Watkins Avenue. And I'm asking, can you come out? Because there is jobs, there's training. There has been 80 percentile of folks being able to work within the community. It's a safe haven. So I'm asking that you come out to visit and at least pour some money into us so that you can see the greatness of what we're doing and actually see the results that is happening there.
Well, Johnny May, thank you for the extraordinary work you're doing, and thank you for the invitation. I've been out in Brownsville several times, as you know, in the last few weeks, dealing with a very tough, very sad situation, but also making sure that the community had a lot of what it needs to move forward stronger. And we just announced a new community center at Brownsville Houses. We announced a lot more staffing at the Brownsville Recreation Center, a lot more support for the Cure Violence programs in the community, which have been very, very positive and successful. So I'll make a deal with you, Johnny May. The next time I'm in Brownsville, I will swing by and see the Culinary Center. I'd be honored to see the good work you're doing.
Ryan in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC with the mayor. Hello, Ryan.
Hey, how you doing? How's everything? Mr. Mayor, I would like to say, you know, thank you for being our mayor. A lot of people give you a bad rap, but I want to say that as a public advocate, you were protesting with Lynch and everything, and you were there front line. So I want to, you know, say thank you for that for a long time. I am one of your biggest fans and supporters, and I hope you become president. My question to you is, now with the increase in mental health, homelessness, and all that, it's been putting in a burden on EMS, especially FDNY EMS. And I know you've been getting these questions. I know, you know, they've been, you know, trying to give you, shed you on a bad light. I want to know, how are you going to improve adding more EMS, you know, more personnel to help with these problems? Because whenever there's somebody, what you call an emotionally disturbed patient, is around, you know, you do need more, a better response from the ambulance, from, you know, to get to that patient itself. What are you going to do to improve more ambulance services and also, you know, a pay parity, you know, give them a decent wage? What are your suggestions for that? I know it's a union issue. I know you guys are always negotiating on that. I just want to get your input on it. But I also want to say thank you very much for being on. I know a lot of people give you a bad rap. Please, I hope you become president 2020.
Ryan, can I ask, before the mayor answers, can I ask, if you're an EMS worker, if I'm understanding you correctly, are you seeing more homeless people with psychological issues who EMS winds up having to deal with? That seems to be the premise of your question.
Absolutely. A lot of EMS, there's a lot more assaults, you know, in dealing with these people. A lot more EMS people are dealing with these people on a daily basis, you know, and it's very difficult because we're so understaffed and we're overworked. I'm trying to get, you know, to shed light on, you know, I try to speak to chiefs, I try to speak to the union about it. It's very difficult to respond because, mm-hmm. you know, this is a totally different approach. NYPD ultimately controls that situation. They deem whether somebody is an emotionally disturbed person or not. We, as a medical professional, don't deem that, which is unfortunate. That protocol needs to change. And I know that's not the mayor's issue, but, you know, I just want to hear his input on it as well.
Thank you very much, Mr. Mayor.
Yeah. Thank you, Ryan. Thank you for...
Uh-oh, I think we're having some cell phone issues with the mayor. Let's see, do we need
can
to call?
Hear me?
I think we've got you back now. Go ahead, try it again.
No, I was just saying thank you to Ryan for his kind comments, but also especially for the important work he does for the city. He's raising important points. So we've added a number of ambulances in the last few years to reduce response time, and clearly that's mean we've needed the personnel to go with them. So to Ryan's first question, do we have, you know, are we committed to, you know, adding? We have added, and we're certainly open to adding in the future. The second is the support for the EMS members. Yeah, they definitely deserve, when there is a situation where they need mental health support professionals to come in, we are working to make that much more readily available so they get that support. They shouldn't have to deal with these situations all on their own. As you said, police often back them up, but we need mental health professionals who can back them up, too. We're trying to do more of that. So I think his point is really valid. I would argue that we need to remember our police officers, our EMS workers have been dealing with folks with mental health challenges for a long time, but the issue was never out in the public the way it is now. I'm glad it's out in the public. Our job is to train people well, to give them support, to have those mental health professionals, but also to get to the root of the matter. The more we can get people to engage mental health services early, the more it does not end up being an EMS worker or a police officer trying to deal with it later. We have to change the very nature of how and when people get mental health services, which is what the whole Thrive Initiative is about, to get it to be accessible broadly early on when a problem first manifests. Brian, in this country, it's a decade typically between the manifestation of a mental health challenge and when someone gets treatment. We've got to change that foundationally so folks like Ryan do not end up trying to deal with things that could have been avoided to begin with.
We're almost out of time. Let's see if we can get to two more things real quick. One, WNYC News is reporting on the first use of a reverse location warrant by the Manhattan DA, that is a warrant to look at the Google location data for all the people with location services turned on their phones who are in the area of a crime. And the privacy concern by civil libertarians is that that's a warrant that would allow the police to scoop up data from many innocent people who are not even suspected of a crime. Do you know about this, and is this okay with you?
The first I'm hearing of it is as you're hearing of it, because obviously the DA is an independent office, it does concern me. And I certainly want to have a better understanding of the checks and balances involved. I could see specific narrow ways of doing that that could be necessary, particularly if there's a very serious threat. But I think there have to be clear checks and balances.
Is it a tool you would ask the NYPD, which is under your branch of government, not to use?
Again, first I'm hearing this needs a lot more evaluation. The underlying concern you raise, I fear that as well. I worry about that as well. So this is something we'll have to evaluate right away.
All right. And lastly, Politico is pointing out today what it says is a contradiction between your campaign statements and what's actually happening in the city on fossil fuel divestment. You said in Iowa last weekend that you're proud to say in New York we've divested $5 billion from the oil companies, from the fossil fuel industry, but Politico writes that the city has not divested any pension money from the fossil fuel industry. So far, it's only announced its intention to study the issue, an analysis that has not even yet begun. Do you want to revise your statement?
Yeah. No, I don't want to revise my statement. We announced this most of 2 years ago, Comptroller Stringer and I, we are absolutely committed, and we announced the plan to do it. It does take time to implement, that's true. But we announced the divestment along with the leaders of the unions who represent those pension funds. So everyone already said we are divesting those resources. The decision's been made. The how you do it and the specifics takes time to implement, that I understand. But no, that was a firm, publicly announced decision by all the stakeholders. And I give credit to Comptroller Scott Stringer. I give credit to Michael Mulgrew at the UFT, Henry Garrido, DC-37. Everyone's been unified. We are divesting from fossil fuel investments.
So this is not just a study of whether to. This is a decision that's made, and how to is the only thing on the table. When will it be figured out?
So, Brian, again, I'm a little surprised at the question. I'm a little surprised at Politico. This was a major announcement with all the stakeholders present where all these questions were aired. This was, again, I'm trying to remember the exact date, but over a year ago, if my memory serves. And we said at the time, to unravel these investments, there is a specific process. You have a fiduciary responsibility on pension boards to do it a certain way. My memory is it's going to take another year or two, but when it has been put in motion, it will happen. And when it's all done, it's $5 billion.
All right. And let me just throw in one addendum to go back to the state trying to get homeless people out of the subways this weekend. The Coalition for the Homeless says the state's plan amounts to criminalizing homelessness, and it's just PR to make it look like the governor is doing something about the problem without actually devoting resources to address and actually the kinds of things you've been talking about in this segment: affordable housing, supportive housing, and low-threshold safe haven shelters from the Coalition for the Homeless list. Would you throw some of this back on the state and saying they're not doing in the post-institutionalization era what they need to be doing funding-wise?
Look, let's face it, that's a, first of all, decades and decades of the state not doing what they were supposed to be doing. I mean, from the beginning of deinstitutionalization, the state of New York made the decision and then consistently didn't do the things necessary to avert the homelessness crisis. So there's a huge amount, and the state has never been held accountable. I'm talking, again, over decades and decades. More recently, look, we put in the city huge resources into getting people off the street. That's that Homestead Initiative, which I said several thousand people have come off the street. We're doing that. We put huge resources into shelter, so folks are not on the street. I want to see a lot more from the state, most especially when it comes to supportive housing. The state made a major announcement on supportive housing a couple of years ago. We'd like to see a lot more action on that, because that's one of the best ways. That's housing for folks with a mental health challenge, for example, to help them get off the street and stay off the street. We could use a lot more of that support. But in terms of what's happening right now with the subways, if what they want to do is put more resources into the kind of approach that we're using, the intense engagement, trying to get people in to shelter, I welcome it. If that's what it is, and valid, of course, enforcement of the laws, I welcome it. If it's something else, you know, we'll say it. But my hope is that what they're doing will be value add on top of the extensive efforts that we're already undertaking.
And listeners, you can read about that issue in detail and what the state is planning to do this weekend and some of the pushback on Gothamist, where our Marella Ivorak reported that story. And Mr. Mayor, thanks as always. Talk to you next week.
Thank you very much, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Much more to come.